Peace and love, everybody.
Love Talk Radio.
Listen, for those of you that are going through, for those of us that are waiting.
Amen, you're live.
Peace and love, everybody. Thank you for chiming in today. This is Queen of E, the founder of Domestic Violence with Mini Tags Organization, and I am live on another show, coming back with some great dinner table conversation, because it's something that we, of course, need to start learning how to do, the importance of doing it, and how it can help us get better. So I am on Issues Christian Men Talk tonight. Okay, I'm with the Brotherhood tonight, talking about domestic violence. And we have a special guest. I have my special guest here with me, my brother Leonard Smith. He's going to come up and be chiming in with me tonight on this beautiful conversation. Of course, you all know that October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So we're trying to push that. And my goal is to get as many men as I can, as many males as I can, inclined to have the conversation, because it's important. Because everybody at the dinner table is affected when we talk about something like domestic violence. Domestic violence does not say, oh, you a girl, so I won't bother you. Oh, you a male child, so I won't bother you. Domestic violence does not work like that. Domestic violence does not care about your gender. It does not care about your profile. It does not care about your profession. It does not care about your weight. It does not care about your height. It does not care if you are an infant baby all the way up until 100 years old. It does not care about your age. We have to get better with understanding domestic violence and those many tags that it wears, so we can start governing ourselves accordingly at our dinner table. Okay? Tag number one going to be verbal abuse. How are we talking to each other? How are we communicating at that dinner table? How are you taught to communicate at your dinner table? Emotional abuse, number two. With the words, it's going to come emotional. The person is going to feel some kind of way, and the person will more than likely feel like they are deteriorating inside and like they have nowhere to go inside, no one to talk to, no one will understand, no one will feel what I feel, because you got this person constantly verbally abusing you, putting you down and shutting you down to the point of your emotional control is out of control. Third tag, financial abuse. Why is that a tag? Why is it important, Queen of C? Because most of us think that we're making the relationship work financially. You think you're making it work financially, right? But you are exhumed at the end of the day. Every time you turn around, this person needs something, gotta have something, wants something, want to do something, but contribute nothing, contribute financially nothing to the relationship or to the household, because we're talking about the family at that dinner table, okay? Then, of course, you have sexual abuse, which is a tag that happens right at the dinner table. Some of us are still sitting beside the person that sexually molested us, and this is 25 years later. You still sit beside this person and ha-ha and chi-chi with your family, knowing that somebody touched you as a male child, somebody touched you, somebody fondled with you, and they looking right at you, they've been in your life, played this great part in your life and everything, but you know this man or this woman had sexually molested you as a young man or as a boy, and who can you tell? Who can you tell that you've been touched by another man? Because we don't make that conversation comfortable for our young men at the dinner table. And last but not least, physical abuse. Physical abuse is the fifth tag that I like to chime into, because the abuser, you know, don't want to hit you if they don't have to. You know, the object is that the abuser does not put their hands on you. So that's why when people say, I don't have any marks, that's a fact. People can go 40, 50 years in these marriages and relationships and never have a mark. But we cannot say that they was not in an abusive relationship, because verbal and emotional and financial abuse really don't show no marks. And sexual abuse don't really show no marks either, especially when you don't tell it, right? When we don't go get the rape kits done, and when we don't have a place for our males to go who feel like they've been sexually abused, you can't see that either. Physical abuse is what we can see. So that's why America zooms into physical abuse, because it's something that we can see. But let me tell you, half of America is not getting physically abused and they're in domestic violence relationships. And we're talking about men that are in domestic violence relationships. Okay, so keep that in mind as we move forward in the conversation. Again, this is Queen of Fee, the founder of Domestic Violence Wisdom and Tech Organization. I am live here kicking it with Issues Christian Men Talk, along with my brother Leonard, who's going to be up in a second from the Sober Living Project, and he's going to share a little bit with us, and we're going to talk and have conversation. If you have questions about the conversation tonight, please press number one on your phone so that we can get you queued in to ask your question or comment tonight. If you want to remain anonymous, which you know I don't mind at all, you can text me yourself at 202-821-8933. If you have a question or comment and you want to remain anonymous, you can definitely do that. So, Leonard, let me bring you on in, Leonard. Leonard, okay, this man is on fire. Let me tell you, he is on fire. This man is on fire. So I get my little tail up. Y'all know I'm in the city doing what I do. I get my tail up, get out to the city, and I'm supposed to be on somebody's show or somewhere or another. God intertwined us because it had to be divine. I heard his story, and I just went, woo, this man got fire. I said, the brother got that fire for you. Now, you play with him, and you're going to get lit up on this conversation tonight. Anyway, Leonard, go ahead and tell the people who you are, what you're doing.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Leonard Smith. I'm the founder of the Sober Living Project. I'm also a co-chair of the Trigger Project of Washington, D.C. A little bit about myself. I'm a new beginner at this thing here called life, man. And why I choose to say that, because I've been through many obstacles of so much pain and trauma in my life. And at one point in time, I was that person that was scared to talk about it, was scared to bring it out, until I met Queen of Fee. You know, I went through my situation and I met myself, the Queen of Fee, and I understood about this dinner table talk that we're going to have tonight. And basically right here, this is a safe haven for the brothers to come out, talk. Also, what I do with the Sober Living Project on Fridays, this Friday will be the last Friday of the month that people could come out to 1,000 on Heart of the Road, where we have a men's inner circle. This Friday right here will be entwined with the women, soldiers, sister soldiers, as I call them, that've been through something too. Queen of Fear is definitely on the list. She will be there. But this doesn't hold too long, because I want to get it back to my sister, man. You know, I've been through a lot. The last 3 years of my life, I was incarcerated for something I didn't do, and I'm still fighting the case now. So, like, I just watched my world crumble in front of me. But, you know, God was there in the midst through the whole situation and was able to help me put it back together. So now I put it back together as far as being a part of this dinner table talk. Sharing my closest, sharing my fears, sharing the things that I was scared to talk about, because if I keep them bottled up inside, then I just crash out. That's what comes with behavioral health. It starts with mental health, and it ends up to behavioral health. When you start tripping, when you start acting out. But I'm just a new beginner, taking these steps day by day, man, in a righteous way to help my brothers, to help my sisters. Treat us all like kings and queens. All right, sis, I'm with you.
All right, thank you so much for that. Okay, so we wanted to talk about tonight his limited feelings, not his masculinity. And what we're trying to say here tonight is that you people at some of these dinner tables, and you know who you are, you limit the male child on what they can feel. You determine what that male child can feel. Okay, so what does that mean? so many. We have young men that sit at that dinner table and have seen trauma right at that dinner table, right? And we can start with ages five, between the ages of 5 and 12, ages of 5 and 13 years old, who sat at this dinner table and watched domestic violence happen in front of their face. Tell me, what is the male child told? What does the male child feel at this age? What has happened to him? Because that's a part of your story as well.
See, when you're young, you're a child, and you see that stuff. You grow to think that it's right. It's also told to you what happens in this house stays in this house. And it can be domestic violence going on like your mother getting beat on or the father getting beat on or either you even getting beat on after that. But what happens in this house stays in this house. So you have nobody to talk to about. And then it builds up inside you so you feel hurt, you feel scared. You know, that's how some of us grow up. Like, prime example, myself. I was always taught it was what happens in this house stays in this house. That's why when I recite that, it seems like it was just yesterday when I was getting abused, when I was being traumatized as a youth, as a youngin', as a child, as a baby, seeing all this, you know. So we're trapped in a cage of you crying out. You want to cry out for help. But if you cry out for help, you might get batted down when you cry out for help. You know, I've been in incidents when I didn't tell somebody at the school that I went to. And guess what happened when I got back home? I got beat down. So it was never told again. So it's pain. Painful. It's fear. And all that. So you have no outlet. Who can you talk to when it says what happens,
right.
What happens in this house to you?
You know, that's a very vicious, I don't know if you feel like that because you're the male here and we're talking about men tonight. And it's very important that we don't limit what you feel. I'm not in the business of limiting what men can feel, and I'm certainly not going to step on your masculinity and start talking about how toxic your masculinity is. It's just disrespectful, and it's not a great way to approach males that are victims of domestic violence or males that are victims of trauma or males that are victims of addiction, or males that are victims of mental illness. So it's not a good way to associate with them. So not limiting your feelings is the route that we're going to go. What goes on in my house stays in my house. That is so traumatizing in itself, because the truth of the matter is you know something bad is going on in your house. So at that time, what are we saying to the young man? Are we saying to the young man, like, when you grow up and get out there in the world and, you know, you at your dinner table, it's okay for you to have lies and secrets and scandals going on at your dinner table so long as you say, what goes on in my house, stay in my house. What type of psychology is this, bro?
Right. It blocks the mind from thinking, right? Because you grow up to do the same thing. For instance, time example, let's use myself. And so it's coming up when I would see things like this and I was told not to say anything. You bet that cry what goes on his face in here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I grew up to have domestic disputes myself. So as I can say, like, with me and my significant other at one point in time, which is my children's mother, I'm not going to say too much, I'm just going to say just enough. I was verbally abused, and then I turned it into physical. So the verbal abuse would come from her end, and the physical abuse would come from my end. Two people crashing. Because I'm crashing out of the hurt, but I'm inflicting. I'm crashing out of the hurt what's being said to me. You won't never be there. She won't never be that. You this, you that. I can get this person to do that. And then me, in my addiction, but in my pain and my feelings, lashing out, and then I'm being disrespectful and abusive to her in front of my children. Being a coward, I would say, about myself. Mm. That's who I'm talking about myself.
Okay. And that can go as far as other men identifying to exactly what you're saying, because we're not limiting those feelings. Okay, so basically, what you had told us here tonight is that what goes on in my house stays in my house is harmful to the male child, it don't matter.
Yeah.
It's something that we just should not say, right?
Totally correct.
Be a solution? What would be a solution to approach that? What would be different? What could we do
differently
to help that male child?
Well, if the male child is being told don't say nothing outside the house, what can we do? I'm stuck. I want you to elaborate a little bit more, sis. I'm trying to hear from you.
You know, I got to make sure that brain working now. Hold on.
Yeah, I would have to find another approach. Well, as being a person that went through something like that, too, you can see when there's something on somebody's mind. You can see when somebody's not in the right mind state or the issue.
Yeah.
Even when they try to hide it, you might can hide it for a day or two, but you can see it moves in your character. You might be moving sluggish. You might be moving around moping and not even knowing you're moping. You can tell when something's on somebody's mind when you've been through the same thing that this person is going through. So you might want to take another route, another approach to it. How's your day going? What's going on? You know what I'm saying? Just different, pick at the ice with the icebreaker, but just, you know what I'm saying? Be respectful for those boundaries, because a hurt person that's been afflicted with pain on them, and they might just think, oh, why are you trying to be nosy? They jump to the defense because they're hurting, and they don't want nobody really to know they're hurting, even though they're showing them that they're hurting. They don't know, you know what I'm saying? So I would be like, oh, man, how you feeling today? You know what I'm saying? And then I just pick away at it, you know? But I will always be respectful and respect those boundaries. And I always start off with myself. Well, you know, man, my day wasn't going as I thought it would go, man. But I just want to let you know, whatever you're going through, it'll get better. If you need some help, you need somebody to talk to, I'm here for you, because we might be going through the same thing or went through the same thing, and we can help each other.
Yeah, that sounds good. I like that. That's a great idea.
Uh-oh.
So chiming into the person, to that young male child or to that child, that male child that you know, who could have been an upbeat child, but things started happening. Mm-hmm. So now you may see him moping, you may see him upset, you may see him lashing out and doing things at school that, you know, something is going on here with this child. And you just got in school. Like, you only been in school for 7 years. Like, so it's like, what was going on at your dinner table before you got to the school? Because you had problems back at home before you even got to the school. So now we got to go back and try to figure out what happened to this young man, right, to understand how we can move him to the present and what he feels. So he know that he don't have to feel limitless. You know what I mean? Oh, I'm sorry, let me take it back. So he knows that he's not limited in what he can feel, because we want the brother to feel limitless in what they can feel. We want to be able to open that door for that brother to come up and say, look, I feel terrible today, you know, and it's because every time I turn around, I feel like you're putting me down. I feel like you don't say words that, you know, lift me up. I feel like you don't give me no positive affirmations. Men need positive affirmations too. I mean, why are we with the person? You know what I'm saying? Or why are we at our dinner table and don't give our young men no positive affirmations to build off of? We're speaking to their emotional intelligence at that point. That is something that we have to do in order to get our young men to feel limitless, which means they're able to come up and say whatever it is that they feel. Does that make sense?
Totally right. Yes, totally right. Totally right. So being a
it's not about, you know, some people like to link, you know, the behavior to power and control and all of these things that are, you know, perceived to be the problem with our men, okay? And a lot of times it's not about power and control. It's about that little boy being victimized as a child and still fighting to not be victimized ever again. Does that make sense?
Yes, of course.
That little boy at the dinner table who was victimized never got his problems worked on because his feelings were limited. They told him only three things where he could feel, and that is, you ain't no punk, you ain't no sucker, and I ain't raised no nigga. And I'm going to keep it a trillion, and Deacon, you know how I roll. So why, how are we grooming this young boy to feel when we only give him those three things that is not even connected to the feeling? That's more threat. That sounds more like a threat than a feeling.
You better not.
Does that make sense, bro?
Yes, it does.
That sounds more like a threat when we tell a young boy, you ain't going to be no punk, you ain't going to be no sucker, and I ain't raising no niggas. This is what we tell a young boy so he can grow up and be a man. Are you stupid? You out your mind. You're crazy. Everybody at the dinner table crazy. If you think that's raising a young man to tap into his inner self, his feelings, because we not talking about his masculinity. I don't care about that. I care about what he's feeling based off of the trauma that he may have dealt with. Does that make sense, bro?
Yes, it does, sir.
Okay. Do we got any questions or comments out there? Or can we keep it moving?
Yes, ma'am. Just keep it moving. We got a couple people listening. Again, if you want to ask a question or comment, just press one on your keypad. We can bring you into the conversation. Right now, it doesn't look like anyone has anything, so you can keep on moving forward.
Okay, cool. Okay, cool. So the next part of this conversation is going to be, and I'm glad that brothers and sisters are listening in. I thank you so much. I think we need to listen in and because we need to understand what we're dealing with men. And October being National Domestic Violence Awareness Month, males need to be included in this conversation. Domestic violence is not about women being victimized. It is not all about that, because these women have sons in these relationships that they are in, and the sons get abused watching their mom get abused. They get emotionally, verbally, and psychologically deteriorate from watching this stuff go on in their household as young men, as boys. So they need to be talking during this month as well about domestic violence, okay, and how we can begin to include males into this very important dinner table conversation. That is our platform tonight. That is why we're here tonight. And, now, of course, again, I have my brother Leonard on with me sharing and caring tonight about males that are going through this conversation, I mean, that are going through some of our topics, our subtopics tonight. Let's move into addiction. Let's move into that man. Let's go from the age of, let's say 13 through 16. That young man, he's becoming a young man now, who is now addicted to a substance or to street life or to, you know, food, because men have multiple outlets that they become addicted to. And it's not just drugs and alcohol that only men become addicted to. Okay? So we're broadening our perspectives. We're not limiting what that brother can feel. So, bro, in the addiction part, what does this young boy do, this 13-year-old through 16-year-old? How is he coping with the fact that he has trauma, or he's seen trauma, or he's dealing with trauma in such a young age?
Well, listen, you said at 13, we're going to start at 7. Like I say, I always put myself in there. When you see things, so where my addiction started off, as far as like at 7 years old, I was sleeping, trying to steal my father's beers out of the refrigerator downstairs. I opened up with my teeth just to get a taste of it, Heineken, just to get a taste of it. Not knowing later down the line that I was going to go into be an alcoholic. By the age of 18, I was a full-blooded alcoholic. And guess what? I would drink for celebrations. I would drink for pain and all that. So, and like I just said, like Queen said, it's not just alcohol or drugs or alcohol or whatever you may say. It could be the street life. So That's what you're being traumatized in the house. You've seen trauma. You've seen domestic violence on both ends, mother and father. Okay, they split. The boyfriend comes in. All that. I've seen so much from the trauma side. Is I had a friend in my younger age, and I seen his mother fighting her boyfriend, and he had to step up to defend his mother. So now you got both of them being abused, and me with the eyes like, wow. And guess what? My friend now is deceased, not from that incident or that action, but who's not to say that his death, it was caused by drug addiction, but that could have drove him overboard. But it just didn't drive him overboard right then and there. But when he got a taste of what his medicine was, and then what he so-called was called his medicine, maybe he used too much of it. Maybe he kept on going. I done had my run around town with these drugs, with alcohol. Alcohol was my drug of choice. If it ain't being popped open or poured, I ain't want it. Straight like that. And like I said, I sipped through the pain. I sipped through the pain because I didn't want to face it. And this is what we do. So when you're told you better not say this, you do not raise, you're not going to be this, you're not going to be no sucker at being my family, I'm bottling up on these feelings inside, and I'm running outside to the streets and trying to find something to release this in. What do I do? I go to liquor. I go to snorting. I go to smoking because I'm thinking that's easing my problems. That's easing my pain. But in all actuality, it's not easing the pain because the pain is still there. And from my knowledge of being an alcoholic, it just makes the pain even worse. Or it makes you do something stupid behind the pain now because you done got fueled all up.
That's pretty interesting. You went to 7 and right into 13. So you was an addict between 13 and 16 years old.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I was drinking.
You was drinking?
I was drinking.
And you was looking for love in all the wrong places and spaces.
Yes.
That's
mine.
Okay. You found a love and a connection in the street. Did you find a family there?
Yes.
To your knowledge at that time. At that time, to your knowledge, you found a family in the street.
Yes.
And what did that family give you that your biological family could not give you or did not give you?
It was love. It made me feel like I was a part of something. You know, my mother died when I was 6. So by the age of 8, I was in and out of foster home. So I was looking for somebody to call mommy. I was looking for somebody to fit the description of a father for me. So I was all discombobulated. So when I finally got 18 and was able to walk away from the foster care system, I went straight back to my neighborhood that I was born and raised in Northeast, and I was in the streets. I jumped off the porch head first, was in the streets. I was introduced to a lot of different things, but at this point in time, I felt unity. We came on the same time. We all made our way in the house at the same time. If I ain't had no, my aunt, the door wasn't open at my aunt's house that night, I could stay over one of my friends' house. It was a bond. It was a bond I never had with nobody else. It was with my friends.
Wow. Because we talk about that with our young men, especially with them feeling loved and appreciated. Because one of the things with our young men, we must make them feel appreciated at a young age. We can't wait until they start getting, 12 and 13 and 14 and 15 and 16, and then we want to ride the coattail. We got to ride the coattail when they're young. Start encouraging them. Start giving them the positive affirmations about who they are, who they destined to be, and what their bloodline looks like. And when young men cannot get that at their dinner table, they go and seek it outside the home. So it's like, when you got a unity of brotherhood, whether it's gang banging, church banging, sex pimp banging, gun violence banging, when you got a gang of brothers who can get together and feel like we got a bond here, I mean, woo, tragedy can happen or some amazing things can happen. Okay? And so we want to change it to where our brothers are getting together and amazing things are happening for them. Should it start at the dinner table? It really should start at the dinner table. But is that happening a lot of times? No. And then you have it where there are young boys who are ending up in detention, you know, and they may feel a bond there in the detention center, you know, with other men or other, you know, young men, because you have other, you have men that are the youth detention officers, and some of those guys are really good guys and want to get the brothers bonded together on some positive stuff. You know, but that's not as frequent as I can go right outside my door, you know, and my homie right there, he's going through the same thing I'm going through. His mother getting her butt beat, and my mother getting her butt beat, and my parents, they just fight all the time, and so none of the family is close. So that's me and him. Consequently, you and your neighbor might build a bond because y'all going through the same thing. You know, and so it's good to have that backbone there to say, okay, another brother know what I'm going through. Like, I'm so glad I'm not the only one going through something like this. You know, and that is okay. That is okay. But that's the purpose of us having the conversation tonight, because we got to stop limiting what our brothers can feel. We got to stop limiting what the male child can feel. After you just set up there and raised him in a bowl of trauma, then you want to talk about what he can and cannot feel, your dead bone. Get the young brother the proper help that he needs so he can feel limitless in what he feels about the dinner table traumatic experiences that go on there and that will go on to his own dinner table if we don't start getting him some help for his feelings, his emotions, his emotional intelligence about what his brain took pictures of to be traumatic for him. Okay? Stop skipping over and talking about punk this, and I ain't raised no punk that, and he ain't no punk this, because this ain't about no punk. You're literally raising a beast. You're literally raising a beast when we keep his feelings limited. Okay?
Hmm.
It's a very dangerous game to play with our young men, and we've lost control. The elders at the dinner table have completely lost control over it. And we have a lot of young boys that are acting out, and they're looking for love in all the wrong places. And when I sit down and talk to them, they link me right back to that dinner table and how they was treated at that dinner table and how they wanted to be loved and cared for and have somebody tell them that they are destined for greatness. Nothing for me to walk up in the room and tell a young brother, you're going to be great. And they respond to my voice. They respond to my authority and my voice, believing in them. And I don't know you, but you're going to be great, though. So we got to get better at giving our young brothers the positive affirmations that they need to be able to come up out of the struggle that they're in. Okay? Because we want the young brother and stop feeling alone and stop feeling like he can't talk to nobody about his feelings limited him and what he can talk about when it comes to his feelings or the traumatic experiences that he's seen in his life. So let's move forward with our next subtopic on the subject. Any questions or comments out there? Come on now, raise your hand, press number one, and get your butt live in the conversation now. And also, I'm live, Queen of Fee. The founder of Domestic Violence and Attack Organization. I'm here with my brother, Leonard Smith, CEO of the Sober Living Project. He's doing amazing things with the young men. He wants to start opening up that door where our young men can start talking about their feelings and how they feel about the things that they have been through. And I'm very supportive of what he wants to do because I think it's a great idea. Brilliant. More men need one-stop shop, support groups, to be able to go in and say what they feel, and they can feel supported at the end of the day, okay? Our next subtopic is going to be mental illness. What are we seeing out here with our brother, who is now, so we know he was abused at the dinner table. If you're following the story, then you'll understand what we're talking about. We know he was abused at a young age. We know that between the ages, you said 7, 13 through 16, he's an addict now. So now 16 to the present, he is mentally ill. What are we doing with this guy at this level, at this point, that he's got the diagnosis of being bipolar or being depressed, being in a manic depression, or he has the diagnosis of being schizophrenic, or he has those diagnoses of conduct disorder, emotional disturbances, ADHD, you name it, he got it. You name it, the brother got it. And it's ridiculous because he shouldn't have it unless there was a predisposition to a mental illness in his bloodline. But he should not have mental illness because he didn't experience all these traumatic experiences at his dinner table, as well as not getting the help that he needed at a young age, then being told that he got to suck up what he feels and saw at the dinner table, and now he got not one or two diagnoses, but he got four or five diagnoses. What are we going to do to help this young male, this young man who's 16 to the present? Then the present could be 60. How do we help him with these diagnoses? Does he need all of these diagnoses? Does he need all of this medication, which is going to depress him even more, push him into more of a depressed state? PTSD. How can we help this brother who has PTSD? Come on, man. Come on and ring the bell. Ring, ding, dong. Ring, the ding, ding, ding,
well,
dong.
How can you help him? Basically, for real, some people don't even help him. They still continue to push them away after all these diagnoses has been out here. Oh, he's a lost case. Oh, he's crazy. As you said, building a beast. When you tell a person, "Don't, you can't do this. You ain't raising no punks and all this type of stuff." So guess what? When something happens in the street that a person can walk away from, he remembers what mama or daddy said. "You ain't raising no punks, and you got to do something about this." And that do something about it can change the outcome of even one of those persons' lives at this present moment. So, but these diagnoses, schizophrenic, I can't be in no closed room right now because when I was in this closed room, I used to get molested. You know what I'm saying? Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the traumatizing things. How can you help somebody like that? A lot of people don't want to help somebody like that, but they want to judge somebody like that. So that's where we start at. That's where we start at because a lot of people, so many people is quick to judge and help. You know, but what are you judging? How are you judging somebody? How are you talking down about somebody and you're not even trying to help them or find a way to help them? It's a lot of criticism going on. I had it involved in me. I was molested at a young age. Now, at one point in time, I'm so overprotective of my son when I'm around him. I want to make sure my son is good. I want to make sure nobody traumatized my child, you know. But I got to help him. I got to see him from where he's at. He doesn't like being around a lot of loud noise. He doesn't like doing this and doing that. And I have to respect that and ease him into the place, but I have to respect his own. So I know how to deal with him, and I know how to deal with somebody that's been molested and been hurt when they was around somebody that they thought they could trust, and their parents probably were alcoholics or drug addicts and left them around this person, probably a cousin or something, and this cousin then fondled with your baby. And when the baby is trying to tell you, "Well, mama, this happened, daddy, this happened." Shut up. No, it didn't. Stop lying. You a liar. Let's talk about it. But when this person turns 35, my age, and he's going to jail for murder, that boy was crazy. That boy Ben ain't had it. That boy, I don't know, something was wrong with that boy. Do you know what started at my dinner table and ended up in my bedroom, which I thought it was my bedroom, but I had to share with my cousin? Let's talk about
Lord,
it. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. That's the truth of the matter is that not only you know, does that brother got the diagnosis, the mental illness diagnosis, but he also self-medicates. You know,
yes.
Because the medicine make him feel kind of funny. The treatment that he's getting with the medication, the different treatment medications, is making him feel woozy and funny and sick and nausea on his stomach. So he self-medicates. He set aside prescription drugs, or he sell them. The prescription drugs are being sold, or his girlfriend might be an addict, or his wife might be. So they end up going that way, but he feels more comfortable with self-medicating. And then there's some who self-medicate and still take the prescription drugs that they own. How are we ever going to get this brother in his right mind? How are we ever going to bring this brother to a place where he can feel limitless in what he feels about the trauma that he has experienced? Because the medicine is making him limited. The people around him at the dinner table are making him limited. The self-medication is making him limited in what he can feel. And not to mention, you got a woman who making you feel limited. I mean, so how will we ever get this brother on the right track? Is this a brother that's going to kill? You know, or is this a brother that's going to commit suicide? Is this a brother who's going to commit family-side, kill a whole family? How are we going to catch this brother before he get to that level of demise? You got a plan, Lenny?
I do want to add something in, and well, you know, it's the way the conversation goes. If we notice, to all the listeners, I'm Leonard Smith once again. If we all listen, we all just open our eyes for a split second. Y'all might be listening to this broadcast right now, but also looking at the TV, and I'm pretty sure some homicides are just running across this. Now, guess what? Did you know that those homicides are ringing across this TV because of that dinner table talk was never given in the right proper manner? That dinner table talk, it all, you hear what Queen of Fear is saying. If you listen to what she's saying, it says it starts from the dinner table. It starts from the house. So if there's no love in the house, if they're scared in the house, if they're traumatized in the house, then they go outside and they bring the traumatization out there. They traumatize other people because they know no love. They know, and they feel as though everybody's against them. Once again, goes back to what Queen was saying, you're building a beast. Look at me, foster kid, 18, guns in my hand. What, 30 years old, first degree murder. Blessings of God, mistrial, but I'm still fighting a first degree murder. No love, no guidance, self-medication. What can I say to somebody that's hurting right now? Sometimes you got to take time out to yourself. Sometimes jail is good for some people. They have to rehabilitate their own self. Rehabilitation is in the man itself. Yes, it's a lot of us hurting. I'm still hurting to this day. But guess what I did? I went through that situation, and I made me a new dinner table. I had to fix what I messed up as far as for myself. Because, yeah, it might start from your childhood that we messed up, or we're messed up, and we're taught messed up things. But then what happens when you get into adulthood? Then we got to own up for our responsibility and be accountable for our actions. Because we're going to be held like it. So we got to man up at some point in time. So we got to break the cycle. If the cycle wasn't broken when we were younger, yes, we hurt and all that, but let the tears go. That's why I got the Sober Living Project. That's why I got this Man's Healing Circle. Come on and talk. I'd rather you come on and talk and let me know what's going on with you, and I can share with you what's going on with me, instead of you going to kill somebody and you getting 30 years, or the other way around, and you going out to get killed. Now, Your kids have no father. Your kids have no mother. What's going on? We are losing black lives because the dinner table talk was never started the right way or finished. Take it back to the drawing board, which is the dinner table, Queen. Take it back there. You might got to build a new table, Queen. You might got to put another table in preparation. And that's what I'm doing right now. That's why I'm here, sis.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You're right. You might have to literally start building and developing a new dinner table. Because, and one of the things that I love about research is that it says that we can go back and teach ourselves and give ourselves what our parents did not give us. We can go back and do that. So the other thing about that is the word of God is so good, and it says, be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, renewing that dinner table within you. The dinner table is within each one of us who have experienced trauma, who have experienced tragedy, who have gone through it. We are all rebuilding our dinner table in us, right? And now we're able to sit down with our children and teach them how to build a better dinner table, right? So therefore, we let now we're hearing from our young girls as well as we're hearing from our young brothers, you know, about what they're feeling, right? The other thing about that, too, is why don't you get a couple of words? You know, I always recommend that you guys get some words out and put them on the table and let all the children start talking about the one word, about what they feel about life. Put the word loudly on the table. Ask the children, what you think of life? Have you ever lied before? Everybody sit around the table. Let's start getting more truth and transparency at that dinner table with our young men, especially with our young men, because we've left them out the conversation for generations upon generations upon generations. And we are 400 years behind with getting the black man at the dinner table to talk about his feelings. We're late. How in the world are we ever going to catch up if we are continuing to leave them out of this type of conversation? Domestic violence, mental illness, addiction, mass incarceration, gun violence. How are we ever going to help our brothers transform from the beast to the man that they are destined to be if we don't start allowing them to be limitless in what they can feel? We're not putting limitations on what that brother can feel. And this is across the board, because some of us are married to white men. Some of us have biracial children. We want that young man to be healthy, emotionally intelligent, and able to express his feelings on a limitless level. So we're transforming him from beast to young man, emotional intelligence, limitless in his feelings, limitless in what he can share. He has a one-stop shop to know, okay, my brother Leonard, I heard him speaking, man. This brother said some things that I've never heard a man say before. Yeah, you got to start linking up with those brothers that are having the conversation, because they can help you begin to feel limitless in what you're feeling. They can identify with you. So the same way you got that family when you go outside and you feeling bad and all y'all on one accord, y'all ready to go, you know, do whatever, risky behavior, y'all ready to get into it. You got a group of brothers who doing something positive too, who can help you begin to feel limitless in what you feel. Okay? So we need to think about that. Hey, bring your information out one more time for the Sober Living Project.
Once again, my name is Leonard Smith, founder of the Sober Living Project. Follow me on Instagram at the Sober Living Project. This Friday, we're closing out with the Power Healing Circle. 1000 Mount Hollywood Road, Washington, D.C., Northeast. 2002 is the zip code. So once again, it's at the old YNC, the old receiving home. The old receiving home, YNC, 1000 Mount Olive Road, Northeast. Come out this Friday. Queen Lafitte will definitely be in attendance right there, sharing some more and dropping some more new of her jewels and knowledge, man, of change. From 7 to 9, and what I wanted to say is be a part of the change. We will rush into destruction. We're rushing to risk our lives to be outside and to be with the brothers in the neighborhood and all this. So we rush to risk our lives, our freedom, but we don't rush to change them. So let's switch that around. Let's rush to change them. Come out. Hear what Queen got to say. Hear what some other ladies I got coming out have to say. Hear what I got to say. And we're going to definitely hear what you got to say first.
All right. Thank you so much for that, bro. It's been wonderful chopping it up, which you know we always chop it up. But it's good for us to definitely get together and chop it up about, you know, our young brothers who are struggling with our subtopics tonight, domestic violence. We have brothers that are married in these relationships and need to devise a plan to get out. You'd be surprised at how many brothers I've helped them devise their exit strategy to get out of abusive relationships with women. I saw a case the other day where the woman, the brother was on the phone saying that, you know, he was trying to get away from her, yada, yada, yada. All you can hear was bop, 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 bop. The girlfriend had shot this man up, killed him dead on the video. See, because, see, the one thing that we fail to realize is that women do abuse men, and women do abuse their sons. They do it. And brothers, when you see something like that going on and you're trying to figure out should you date this woman or not, pay attention to how she treat her children. Pay attention to how she treat that son of hers, because it probably going to be you next. See? You got to stop looking for love in all the wrong places and spaces, brothers, and get your wholeness from within. If you never got wholeness at your dinner table, you got to start giving it to your own self. You got to start learning who you are and giving it to your own. You can't be afraid to chime in and say, Queen of Fee, I want to talk to you because I'm going through X, Y, and Z. You can't be afraid to refer another brother to me because you know he's going through something, or your son to me. You can refer them to me and say, look, Queen be talking to the men. She be helping the brothers, devise plans. She's the consultant. She speaks to the young men about, you know, strategies that they can take to become better, okay? And the one thing about my male brothers who do chime in to me, they want a place where they can share their secrets and feel comfortable with knowing that they have a safe space. They have a safe space. And that is something that we don't get a brother. We don't give them a safe space to share. We just tell them that they can't be no punk, they can't be no sucker, and I ain't raising no faggy or no nigger. Wrong, 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 wrong. And you need some parenting classes. And you need some mental health. And you broke down intramarital for telling a young man something like that. Telling a young boy something like that. It's very disrespectful. It's very hurtful to do that to a young brother who's trying to be black in America or be great in America. It's wrong to do that, and we've got to stop doing it. It's our fault. Every leader that is at that dinner table who has done this to a brother, it's your fault. It's your fault that the brother is in the prison system right now. And you say, yes, the prison system, oh, he has a choice. He's grown now. He got a choice. Yeah, okay, whatever. And psychologists and therapists and all of us will say, well, what happened at the dinner table? We got to take this young brother back down memory lane to help him resolve some of that conflict and that trauma that he experienced at his dinner table in order to get him to feel limitless, to understand why he took another wrong turn. So jail could be the turning point. Incarceration, again, could be a turning point where we're able to work with that brother and get him to see some different things. All right, but we're talking about prevention. How can we prevent that young brother from getting into the system? In the first place, we got to give him a safe space. We got to give him a safe space to share. We got to give him a safe space of affirmation. Instead of getting him on the radio listening to some of these rappers out there, won't you get him at the dinner table and get him to write, I am great. I am great. I am great. I am great. I had to get my son at the dinner table, and he's 8 years old. I had to get him at the dinner table and get him to write, I will not be disrespectful no more. I will not be disrespectful no more. I will not be disrespectful no more. I am great. I am great. Start speaking greatness into our young men. Stop telling them that they punk the suckers and all this stupid stuff. Start speaking greatness into their destiny. Start standing them up, straight up, and not slumping them over. Start standing them straight up. Start teaching that young brother how to give you a nice, firm handshake. My 18-year-old give you one of the best handshakes in America. My 18-year-old will give you one of the best hugs in America because that young brother is standing straight up. He ain't slumped over. We got to do better. I don't care what you say. You can get mad at me. I don't care. You can get mad at my brother, too. We don't care. What we care about is our young men at these dinner tables having a safe space to share their limitless feelings. And multiple topics we talked here tonight. I want to thank everybody.
Amen.
For
amen.
Saying,
amen, Queen. Queen is speaking far. First of all, let me thank you. I want to thank you. I want to thank you for Brother Leonard Smith for joining, being part of the program tonight and sharing what you shared. And, you know, there's some things you touched upon that I just wanted to get with the listening audience. So we need to key on some of these things. You said about a safe place. You said about people out here struggling and self-medicating. The trauma leads to the chain reaction to the violence that we're seeing in the communities. And some of you parents, you need parenting classes. You need therapy. You need to get better to raise our kids better and raise our sons better. So I just wanted to get those points across. And then, Queen, give your contact information for the folks that are listening, and they can reach out to you.
Yes, they can reach out to me at 202-821-8933 if you got a question or you concerned or just ask a question, concerned, just pick up the phone and call and just say, look, Queen, I heard you. I want to ask you a question. I'm going to go in with you. You know, feel free.
Amen. Also, you're on Facebook. You're on Twitter. The domestic violence wears many tags. What's the initials? DVWMT. I got it right. There you go. Amen.
DVWMT.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
You can put DVWMT
yes, ma'am.
In your Google search.
Uh-huh.
And we'll come right up in the Google search.
Okay, amen, amen. Well, Queen, I appreciate you for coming. We're gonna do this again because, like you said, next month is Domestic Violence Month, and we're gonna try and coordinate our schedules and come back again, and we can touch on some other things because I do believe this domestic violence thing, especially from men as victims, is something we really need to get out there and let people start to think about the things that goes on that causes. These outbursts, these emotional outbursts, these physical outbursts, and then those manipulation things that happen in relationships that all this stuff is rooted in, that we have to be able to expose and let people see what's going on with it. Because some of us need to, I think a lot of folk need to see and be honest in their understanding of the relationship they're in right now and the bad
mm-hmm.
parts of it, the red flags, so they maybe can get mm-hmm. it, they can fix it or get out.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I want to encourage you, you know, that's going to be a whole other episode we're going to do, but
that's
I do appreciate you for taking
that's
time. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. But we're going to do it because.
I want to throw this out there real quick before we go.
Go ahead. You got time. Go ahead.
Helping men devise those plans, just to piggyback off what you were saying, helping men devise those plans to exit in secret as well is another, you know, another thing that we want to chime into. Next month.
All right, Queen. But again, thank you, Brother Leonard. Thank you very much for being on with us. And we're going to reach out. Again, this has been Issues Christian's Talk. We've been here with Queen Alfie and the domestic violence. Excuse me, domestic violence wears many tags and organizations located in Southeast D.C. You can reach out and find her on Facebook. You can Google her and contact with her. And we just encourage you to look at your relationships and look at what's going on. Because domestic violence is one of those things that crosses all socioeconomic, race, ethnic group. It crosses all lines. It every community is dealing with it. But we have to be able to start getting some strategies to try first to prevent it and also get help to those who need help. Queen, you got the last closing, you got the closing comments. And again, I appreciate you for being part of the program tonight.
Thank you so much. I'm so blessed to be here. Leonard and I both, we enjoyed having that dinner table conversation with the brothers and sisters out there. that are listening in, once again, if you know somebody who is going through a domestic violence situation, reach out. Reach out or have them call 1-800-799-SAFE, 1-800-799-SAFE. And that number should link you to the current resources in your state to be able to help you get the help to devise an exit to leave that relationship. So thank you for chiming in tonight. Go in peace and love, my brothers and sisters. Go in peace and love. Thank you for chiming in tonight. Peace and love.
Amen. God bless you, Queen.